Creepy's fun. I love creepy. I love scary movies. I love being scared. I love reading creepy stuff. I love writing creepy stuff. I like talking to people who have encountered creepy stuff. I don't like to encounter it myself. at all. They were sitting around having supper, and there was a noise from upstairs. Immediately in Dan's mind, he was thinking, it's here. The Harlequin's upstairs, wondering where I am. It's searching for me. And he said his father, who had been, you know, denying any of this had been happening to his son, let out just a loud moan and then a cackle.
Oh, God.
And froze. He just froze. The baby's mom picked him up, and the baby was looking at this man over his mom's shoulder, and he grinned, and then the eyes just went from blue to completely black. I love a good ghost story, a good UFO story, a good Bigfoot story, but you know, these bizarre stories that people never hear are absolutely my favorite.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio, with your host, Tim Banal.
What is going on, my friends? This is Tim Banal of banalofamerica.com with another edition of BOA Audio Season 7. Coming at you with a real barn burner of a program this week as we welcome back our old friend Jason Offutt, who returns to BOA Audio for a lengthy conversation covering the many odd and creepy stories found at his blog, From the Shadows. He has been chronicling the weird and unusual for years, and since I had some time in the off-season, I wanted to sit down with Jason and really go over some of the really strange stories that he has reported on at From the Shadows. So I spent about a day or so just digging into that massive archive at his blog and cherry-picking some of the weirdest stuff I could find. We cover a myriad of stories here, and it would be damn near impossible for me to tell you all about them. Let me give you some of the highlights. We're going to hear tales of wicked priests, harlequin entities, gnome-like creatures, get an update on the black-eyed kids as well as black-eyed people. We're going to hear a story about a fae girl. We'll discuss time travelers and get an update on his research and investigation into the infamous time traveler Madman Markham. We'll also hear the story of a haunted shopping mall, Gravity Hill in Missouri, a man who claims that he dated an alien, and much, much more. Just a whole slew of really wild stories that Jason Offutt has uncovered and reported on at his blog, From the Shadows. And we've got links all over Banal of America to the specific stories. So if you're listening to this and you want to learn more about, say, the Fae Girl or the Harlequin entities, head on over to BOA and there's links to all the different stories you're going to hear us talk about here in this conversation. As always, when we welcome Jason Offutt back to the program, it is an episode that is packed with creepy stories, but also plenty of laughs. Really feels like the two of us are just sitting at a bar sharing stories and talking about the world of the paranormal. It is the perfect companion to your Memorial Day festivities or summer barbecues. Sit around the campfire with this one, my friends, because you're going to be spooked more often than not as we welcome back our longtime friend, Jason Offutt. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Jason Offutt, allow me to provide you with a little background on him. Jason Offutt is a writer and college journalism instructor. At various times in his career, he has also been a newspaper editor, general assignment reporter, photographer, newspaper consultant, bartender, farmhand, and the mayor of a small Midwestern town. His books include Haunted Missouri, Darkness Walks from Anomalous Books, What Lurks Beyond the Paranormal in Your Backyard, as well as the humor book On Being Dad. On that note, Jason has been named Humor Writer of the Year multiple times by the Missouri Press Association. He lives with his wife and children in Maryville, Missouri, and his website is www.from-the-shadows.blogspot.com. Check it out. And with all that said, let's get down to business, my friends, and rock and roll. This interview was recorded on March 23rd, 2012. Jason Offutt regales us with a collection of creepy tales on BOA Audio Season 7. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of BOA Audio Season 7. This time on the program, we're welcoming back a good friend of ours. He's been on several times in the past. He's a staple of the baseball special, but we're going to be talking about the world of the paranormal here tonight. And he really is a master reporter, researcher, storyteller, so I'm really looking forward to really delving into some crazy stories with him. He's the author of the latest book, Paranormal Missouri, Show Me Your Monsters, as well as What Lurks Beyond the Paranormal in Your Backyard, Darkness Walks, the book on shadow people that is tremendously popular, as well as Haunted Missouri. And he's a humor writer who has won numerous awards and wrote the book on being dad. So welcome back to the program. Very excited. It's going to be fast, loose, and very laid back. Jason Offutt, welcome back to BOA Audio.
Tim Bonnell, always, always a pleasure to be on your show.
Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate that. Check is in the mail.
Yeah, I'm sorry you mentioned baseball.
We're going to get the regular listeners are going to be wringing their hands if we even go there, so.
Wait, which I'm not. Just regular listeners, I'm a Royals fan, so just weep for me.
So before we sort of get into, you know, the overall discussion, how you been in the last, I think it's been a couple of years since we had you on the show. So how you been, you know, in the last couple of years? What's been going on with you? What are you working on? You know, what's up in the world of Offutt?
Well, I took a short break actually from writing paranormal books. I've still kept my blog From the Shadows up. I'm still seriously interested in the paranormal field. But as you mentioned, I also write humor. So for the past probably year and a half, I've been pursuing a couple of different humor books. One of them, which I've gotten some interest in from publishers. I haven't picked one yet, but is, I think I've mentioned this to you before at some point, is, How to Kill Monsters, with just stuff you got laying around the house.
Yep, I remember that concept, yeah.
I've got that and a travel book I've been working on. So I've kind of taken a break, but some of the things we're going to talk about tonight, I am gearing up for another book on the paranormal called Dangerous Entities.
Oh, scary. Dangerous Entities. I like that. That sounds ominous. Which I like. I'm a big fan of the ominous. So
right, anything that gets anything that gets a reaction or somebody's panties in a wad is always great.
So what I thought we were going to do here for tonight's conversation was, as you mentioned, the blog From the Shadows is just chock full of amazing stories on there that you've been told by people and you've looked into and written some tremendous blog posts, articles about these various incidents, a whole litany of stuff on there. So I spent the last day or so just going through the blog, looking it over, and sort of compiling my list here of Offutt's oddities. So we could talk about some of these weird tales that you've chronicled over the years at From the Shadows.
Yeah, which is quite an undertaking that you took, Tim, because, I mean, there's like 5 years worth of stories on the blog.
Yeah. Well, I'll be honest, I didn't read all of them, but I went through as many as I could, and the ones that really stood out, I was like, put that on the list here for Offutt's oddities, because...
Well, I can already tell you, you've read more than my family has.
Well, I'm like family now at this point, so I guess
at this point, absolutely.
Yeah. So...
You're that uncle who leaves the bathroom open at family dinners.
Light a match. So, so we'll just dive in, I guess, on these stories. So, one that that you had mentioned to me when we were sort of corresponding back and forth and setting this whole thing up was the Wicked Priest,
which is a very, you know, talking about ominous, with a very creepy tale here. So I guess regale us with the story of the wicked priest, and, you know, I'm sure I'll pepper you with some follow-up questions as to the makeup of this tale.
Well, the weird thing and the really cool thing and the thing that makes me, you know, one of the things that makes me glad I don't live in San Francisco, is this priest, because after, I got information and asked questions and wrote the story about this first encounter, I've had two more people from the same area who ride the same, you know, mass transit system around the San Francisco area who've encountered this priest entity. The first one that I talked with, this, woman had to go into work on an odd day. She had to go on a Saturday, and she normally didn't go, but she took the Bay Area Rapid Transit System, they call it BART, to work. And on the way home, as she was walking out of her office building to go to catch this train, she was clicking off things in her head that she had to do. And she's worried about work, worried about getting things done. So she gets on the train. She's not really paying attention. And all of a sudden she looks up and she sees this priest. And he's staring at her. And she really doesn't think too much about it at first. But, you know, anybody staring at you really kind of creeps you out. So yeah. She started looking at the guy. And he had white, almost translucent hair. And it was pretty thin. He had a really large birthmark that covered most of the side of his face.
Who?
And his eyes were almost all completely white. She did notice some blue in the iris, but it was like really, really washed out pale blue. And she realized, oh, the guy's staring at me, and the way his eyes look, he's probably blind. Until he started talking to her. And he started telling her the things that she'd been thinking before she got on the train.
Oh, God.
Yeah, this, of course, freaked the hell out of her.
Yeah.
And so she changed trains or changed cars and got out of got off the train a little early because she didn't want to get off the train at the same stop, you know, at her stop and this guy follow her. So she got off at a different stop, and she waited and waited until the train was gone. She didn't see the priest get off, and as she was leaving, she stopped to buy another pass for the next week, and she saw a bum sitting on the ground. I'm not politically correct, so he was a bum sitting on the ground, and he asked for money, and she looked down, and it was the same guy. You know, dressed in, he wasn't dressed as a priest anymore, but it was the same guy, same birthmark, same eyes. Same everything, but he was just, you know, dressed, you know, very, very shabbily, and he asked for money, and then he said something about what she'd, you know, what he'd been talking about her on the, you know, to on the train.
Oh, my God.
So she ran and got out of there.
Yeah.
And thankfully, has never seen the guy again. But after that story was published, I had a couple other people contact me with basically exactly the same tale. One guy's was just nails on with hers, except for when he got off the train, he again made sure that the guy didn't follow him, and he went and got his car and started to drive, and he had two ways to go, either right toward his house or left, and turning right, this priest was standing in the middle of the road.
Oh my God.
It was like, I mean, this guy almost wet his pants staring at this thing, and he turned left, of course, and took, you know, a really long, strange way to get to his house because he didn't want this priest, this entity, whatever it was, to follow him there. And the third one again was very similar, except for this time there was physical contact. The priest touched this woman's hair, and she said it felt sticky.
You
know, like getting a spider web caught in your hair, of course, but it was something, you know, bigger because it was fingers. And when she turned around to confront the guy that had been sitting back there, he was just gone.
That is so weird. It's like got so many different weird elements. At first, like the homeless guy twists kind of in that first one, because I was sort of going that way. I was like, you know, Maybe this is some eccentric homeless person, but then it's like he also has this like supernatural ability. It's very weird.
Well, it's I'm envisioning Agent Smith from The Matrix.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, appearing as a homeless guy, you know, all of a sudden, and but he didn't get up and, you know, use jiu-jitsu on her.
He just read her mind. This is even weirder.
Which is worse. I might rather get my ass kicked.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not even like he was saying things that she was thinking at the time. It's like he wasn't even around when she was thinking that stuff, so it's...
Well, he might have been.
That's true, yeah.
Yes.
Very weird. Very weird. And I presume...
But what is this? I mean, as she told me, and Ed, as the other two people told me, they weren't, you know, freaked out by the fact that he was a priest, because, you know, they see people in religious clothing all the time. You know, no big deal. But, you know, all of the strange things that you know, strange and creepy things that sprung forth from that were, you know, just really scared the hell out of them.
Right, right. Well, it's with three people, it's even weirder, because then it's like, this dude's probably lurking around out there. Like, it wasn't just one lady's weird encounter. I'd, you know, be wondering if you keep hearing more stories, like, over the years from people. Anyone who's listening is in San Francisco, let us know if you run into this thing.
Right. I didn't mean to disparage your city. I'm sure it's a fine place.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's the Bay Area rapid transit system is. I mean, that's where everybody in my frame of reference here encountered the guy. I mean, what happened? Could it be, you know, maybe just a bad man who liked to dress as a priest died, you know, while he was riding the train? I don't know. Maybe, you know, it's some entity trying to prey on people who's just, you know, figured that this is a place to do it on.
Yeah, I hadn't even given the ghost idea much thought, but now that you mention it, yeah, that's definitely a possibility, you know. Sounded almost albino-like or something, too, with the eyes and the hair and everything, but who knows.
Right, and they all described his skin as really, really waxy, and it kind of had a sheen on it, not like he was sweating, but just like it was moist.
Ew. This guy's strange. That's just a creepy one. Just another reason why people don't want to use the subway.
Right, I don't like running into moist people on public transportation either.
Yeah. It's like keep the moist ones into their own car. All right, so that's the wicked priest story. Now, one tale that you've been sort of telling a lot over the last few weeks and months or so is this Harlequin tale, which has been up at From the Shadows and also the Mysterious Universe blog. Really creepy stuff. I mean, I don't know how you do it sometimes, dealing with all this creepiness. That's the thing with me. Although I guess, you know, we've talked about this in the past. There have been times when you've been like, all right, I've had enough of the creepiness. I can't do this anymore. But it's creepy stuff.
Right. I mean, there are some things that I have kind of abandoned. You're right. Which I think one of them you want to talk about later. but yeah, it's you know, creepy's fun. I love creepy. I love scary movies. I love being scared. I love reading creepy stuff. I love writing creepy stuff. I like talking to people who have encountered creepy stuff. I don't like to encounter it myself. at all. I mean, I've had a couple of things happen in my life, and that's enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what is, tell this Harlequin story.
Well, this just grew amazingly, amazingly bizarre. I was contacted by a guy named Dan Mitchell a couple of years ago, gosh, maybe three or four by now, who had been encountering something since he was a kid. He was like 5 years old. He lives in Wisconsin. And an entity, something would come into his room. It's shaped like a human. It was really thin. It was androgynous, and it was shaped. I mean, its face was pointed, but it had a round mouth, and it never had any other expression. That it just looked scared,
yeah,
or surprised. I think is what he said, surprised. It had very, very large eyes and not very much of a nose. And this thing would come into his room. It was dressed in very motley clothes. He remembers it smelling like it just rained when this thing came into the room. And sometimes it would, you know, be at his window. His bedroom was on the second floor. He said once he saw a hole in his wall that it stepped through. But he knows it talked to him, and it didn't use very many words. Mostly it talked through dance. It would dance for him, and he would know what it was trying to say. And he said it called itself the Tooth Fairy when he was really young. And I mean, it occurred, and he told his parents about it, and his parents, of course, didn't believe him. And you know, years passed, 2, 3, 4 years passed, and the encounters kind of slowed down, but it still kept showing up. And he remembered once at dinner, they were sitting around having supper, and there was a noise from upstairs. Immediately in Dan's mind, he was thinking, it's here. The Harlequin's upstairs, wondering where I am. It's searching for me. And he said his father, who had been, you know, denying any of this had been happening to his son, let out just a loud moan and then a cackle.
Oh, God.
And froze. He just froze. And Dan said the next thing he remembers, he had no idea how much time passed, but he woke up and his face was in his plate. He had food all over his plate, his face. And the rest of his family had done the same. And when everybody kind of snapped out of whatever, you know, hypnosis or whatever they were in and looked up, they just resumed eating like nothing had happened. And he has never gotten his father to admit that he's seen anything. He's asked him in the last couple of years, and his dad just, we won't talk about it. But from this point, his mother started getting really strange. His dad worked at night, and his mom had talked about dreams she'd had about a man dressed as a woman knocking on the door. She said, a transvestite would knock on the door in my dream, and I'd open the door, and then I'd wake up. But it scared me. She started hearing rattling around in the basement. She knew somebody was there. She called the cops a number of times to come and look in the basement, and nobody was ever there. Just a bunch of weird things like that that happened in the house. And when Dan, you know, got, you know, around puberty age, 12, 13, 14, the thing just vanished. He didn't see it anymore. Until he was old enough to drive, and he and some friends were, they'd gone to a party at a friend's house, and Dan was driving them home, and they saw somebody walking, a girl walking, and she was walking like she was drunk. And one of the guys said, hey, I think I know who that is. And they got closer, and they noticed that it looked like a man dressed as a woman with a really bad red wig. And when they got close, it turned around, and he saw the Harlequin's face, the same big eyes, the scared or surprised expression on the face. And he just felt that it was furious with him. And they blanked out. And about 10 minutes later, you know, all of a sudden everybody woke up. And they were a mile down the road. The guy sitting shotgun had wet his pants. And Dan took everybody home, and as soon as they got out of the car, they shot to their door. Because this, I mean, just freaked the hell out of everybody.
Jesus.
Yeah, and he kept seeing this thing, you know, every once in a while. Years would pass, he'd never see it. Once he remembered he and his dad had rented a cabin to go fishing, and they were heading into town from just out in BFE, and on the way, in the middle of nowhere on this gravel road, they saw this person dressed kind of like a woman, but they knew it was a man, really wearing a really weird blonde wig and huge sunglasses, and it was after dark. They noticed this person pushing a baby carriage up the hill, and it was a gravel road. And the dad didn't want to talk about it, but of course Dan knew exactly what this was.
That's strange. It's like wayward clowns.
Well, you see, I've always been freaked out by clowns. This didn't help.
Yeah, exactly. But
other encounters were, I mean, even you know, a little weirder. He and his wife moved away, and for a year or two, and then they came back, and they were moving in the same neighborhood, in the same block where their parents lived, where Dan grew up, and they knew the neighbors that they were, you know, they were moving in next to. They knew them really well, and when they moved in, the neighbors were like, you know, Dan, this is the strangest thing happened. This man dressed as a woman. We were going to watch TV. We were cooking a pizza in the oven, and this person appeared in our kitchen. And she said that, you know, I've got a key for the house next door, but it doesn't fit. But it fit in your door. Can you help me? What? And they told this person to leave because, of course, it scared the hell out of them. And they watched it leave and walk away and never saw, getting to a car or anything. She just kept walking. Dan saw that same sort of thing a couple of different times. He was cleaning stuff up in the basement of the house where him and his wife had just moved into, and he heard somebody rattling the door, and it was like 6 o'clock in the morning, and he, kind of ignored it, and finally he went upstairs and saw a person walking away from the door, and it was this harlequin, walking away. So, I mean, he knows this thing's been keeping tabs on him for years, and what really, really scared him, the first series of times I talked with him, what really scared him was that he had a five-year-old kid who was telling him about the person who came in his room in the middle of the night and danced for him.
Oh, God, so, like, starts all over again.
Yeah, I interviewed people who, experts in the Hopi religion, because this entity resembles Masao, one of their, a god in their mythology.
Yeah.
I talked with somebody who's familiar with Norse mythology, and this resembles, Loki and, other various types of entities, and all these things are, kind of generational. If something's screwing with somebody, it's going to screw with their kids and their grandkids and their great-grandkids. I'm speculating that's why Dad didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah, because maybe it had been messing with him when he was a kid, and now he's
exactly.
Like, oh, God. That's just so weird. Because you can't even, these are the kind of things, almost like the priest thing, you can't even really put these into a box. Like, It's some kind of, it sounds to me like some kind of elemental being of some kind, like an elf-like creature of some sort. Was it short? Was it like a little diminutive?
Well, no, it wasn't tiny. I mean, it was an average size, maybe a 5'6", I'm guessing, something like that. It was just average. Wasn't really tall, wasn't really, really short.
Seems like also I wouldn't say embraces, but there's like an absurdity level to it, too. Like I said, it sounded like it was wayward clowns, like pushing a baby carriage on the gravel roads, like the kind of foolish crap you expect from clowns to be doing.
Foolish crap, or maybe, you mentioned elemental, maybe something, different type of entity that's trying to fit in, trying not to be noticed, trying to mimic different things that it's seeing to try and fit in, but since it doesn't know how humans think, how humans really act, it's getting a lot of things wrong.
Right, like a reverse Man in Black.
Right. Well, and this thing is not just with Dan Mitchell. Since Dan Mitchell's story came out, I spoke with, I can't remember his name. He's a councilman in England. He described seeing the same sort of entity, and I contacted him, and he's convinced that it was an extraterrestrial. I talked with a woman in Nebraska who saw an entity just like this, and a couple of women who were in Lawrence, Kansas a few years ago and encountered something exactly like this in the middle of the day that disappeared on an empty street when they turned their back and then turned back to look at it. I mean, and the thing was just gone. So some things like that. And I also talked with a woman in close to St. Louis, Missouri, who when she was in high school worked at a cigarette shop, liquor store. And a woman came in. She had a very pointed chin, very pale skin. She remembers her hands especially were the fingers were amazingly long and thin. She was wearing a big wig and huge sunglasses. She really didn't have much of a nose. And this woman came in, asked for a pack of cigarettes, took them and left. And this woman, who was a high school girl when she saw this, is convinced that she absolutely was not human. But it sounds a lot like this Harlequin character.
Yeah, yeah. The alien idea definitely has some sort of credence. I've heard weird stories like that where I think there's a guy who talks about the tall white aliens or something like that, and how they go into Vegas and shit like that because they don't stand out when they look semi-human. And
hey, who the hell doesn't want to see a giant white tiger disappear?
Exactly.
If I'm coming from Andromeda or where the hell ever, I want to see that.
because at first you're like, wow, those tigers they have down there are awesome. And it's like, yeah. Someone who can make them disappear? This planet's amazing.
Yeah, so. Yeah, but you had mentioned, you said this kind of sounded like, you know, elves and you know, things of that nature. I talked to Brad Steiger about this. He actually doesn't live that far from me. He lives up in Iowa.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and anyway, I got a hold of him, and he was like, yeah, that's the Earl King, the Elf King. You know, these beings have been doing this for, you know, centuries upon centuries upon centuries, and they're still at it.
So weird. So weird. And this thing's usually, like, androgynous, I guess you could say, maybe, because it sounds like people seem to think it's a man in drag, but then other times it's a woman, maybe. Who knows? We don't, you know.
Right. Yeah. It's somebody you can't pin. You can't pin if it's a man or a woman, or an emo kid.
Yeah. Yeah. A twihard.
Right. So this kind of came to a culmination for Mitchell, because he got a feeling one morning that this thing wanted to talk with him.
Yeah.
And it told him where he wanted him to go. So he went. He went to a park to see this thing, and he said he was terrified. He duct taped his driver's license to the inside of his thigh, you know, in case somebody found him dead in the park. His driver's license would be, I didn't ask him what happened when he ripped the duct tape off.
Oh, Jesus. This sounds like a Craigslist encounter.
Right, except for he lived. But anyway.
Yeah.
No, he went to this park and he said he sat in this, on this bench for about 10 minutes, and, you know, was about ready to get up and leave, and then he felt that there was somebody behind him. And he was at first terrified to turn around, because he knew what was there, and eventually he did turn and peek over his shoulder, and he saw this thing, and it communicated to him, and it told him that you know, it's older than he would ever know. He said that from the feeling he got that this thing had once been human, but kind of transcended its humanity. You know, I'm really not sure how or where to place all this.
Yeah.
I mean, because this, you know, sounds like an episode of the old Star Trek where, you know, people are thought beings now. They used to be people, but, you know, they transcended this. I don't know, maybe this shit was talking to Gene Roddenberry.
Yeah, weird. Very weird stuff, yeah. See, like, I had never even really heard these tales till you started talking about them recently, so kudos to you for bringing them out there, you know.
Well, yeah, I love a good ghost story, a good UFO story, a good Bigfoot story, but you know, these bizarre stories that people never hear are absolutely my favorite.
That's why I'm calling them Moffat's Oddities. Now, all right, so that's the Harlequin. Tremendous stuff. Tons of stuff on your blog about these stories. People want more of those. Now, as I noted, Darkness Walks was one of your big breakout books that everybody's still talking about. Everybody still loves that book. It's from Anomalous Books. How about just an update on the Shadow People research? Anything new going on there as far as, you know, stories you've heard about the Shadow People? Are they doing anything different or new or weird, you know, Shadow Kids or anything strange like that going on?
Well, not a lot of new stuff. I mean, I still talk to people about Shadow People encounters. People are, you know, still having a lot of Shadow People encounters. I mean, the only, you mentioned kid, the only Shadow Kid story I've ever had, I got recently, and this woman was really defending her shadow person because she's got said she has a shadow kid who, stays in her house and plays with the cats. Good for him.
Yeah. Yeah. So she's like taking him in as her own little paranormal adoptee, if you will.
You know, which isn't bad if it keeps the cat occupied and you don't have to feed him.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's good. No, I mean, shadow people I've been fascinated with since I was about 8 or 9 years old, because I saw these things walking through my room at night, and they just absolutely scared the hell out of me for good reason. And when I wrote my first shadow person story and put it on my blog, It was and still is the first story that got, I mean, it got me the most response of any story, because I didn't realize there were so many people out there who had encountered these entities.
Yeah, it seems pretty pervasive. And the more people talk about it, the more you hear about it and stuff, you know. It's like the Hat Man thing. I've heard so much about the Hat Man in the last few years. It's amazing.
Right. I just got finished working on an article. You mentioned Mysterious Universe. I just got finished working on one, and one of those stories is about the Hat Man. These guys, they were brothers, and when they were teenagers, they lived in the basement, which is always a fantastic place to sleep. And in this room where they slept, there was a Hat Man that they called the Cowboy, because they said he looked like the Marlboro Man. You know, those, I don't know if you've ever seen one of those, or maybe that's just for the Midwest, but, you know, auto shops will cut out.
Yeah, I've seen those things. Yeah, like silhouettes, right?
Yeah, silhouettes of a cowboy. I mean, and it looked like that, except for it paced back and forth in front of their dresser. And it had blazing red eyes, and it would just pace and stare at them all night. And the Hat Man has this a lot more than any other type of shadow people encounter. It feels to the people encountering them that it is just, it's feeding off of the terror that it's, you know, forming in them just by its mere presence.
Weird.
Yeah, I'm glad mine didn't do that when I saw it, because, you know, I peed the bed long enough. That would have kept me going for a while.
Yeah. That would have been a setback.
Mm-hmm. Now, has anyone... Nathan, why are you still peeing the bed? Demons in my room, Mom!
Now, I'm sure this was covered in the book, but my mind fails me because of far too much partying in college. So, have there been instances where people have communicated with these things in some sort of, you know, verbal way?
Very, very rarely. There have been people who talk to the shadow people, who tell them things, who yell at them, who pray at them, who laugh and sing at them, you know, to try and drive these things away, that get a reaction from shadow entities. It's been very rare that a shadow entity will actually talk with a person. If they do, maybe it's a name. You know, a shadow person speaking my name would probably seize my heart up.
Yeah, that would be pretty freaky.
Yeah, there was one guy I talked with. His name is Mick. I can't recall his last name. He lives in Toronto, who encountered a shadow person dressed in a monk's cowl when he was about 18 years old. And the thing pinned him down and told him it was going to kill him.
Oh, God.
And it didn't. It took him on some, you know, wild spiritual ride that I also, I've got detailed on my blog somewhere, that the guy felt, like I was saying, shadow people, you know, will, you know, tend to drain, if they're a negative kind, tend to drain your energy. And this guy felt himself being, you know, his life being sucked from him by this thing until eventually he snapped out of his grasp. But it told him. I mean, what could be scarier than that? Something blacker than night. Just a silhouette dressed as the Grim Reaper telling you it's going to kill you.
Yeah. I think I would just give up at that point. I'd be like, all right, dude, just make it quick, please. Yikes. These shadow people. There's some spooky creatures. Well, on the note of spooky creatures here, and you talked about how you kind of... Seems like maybe you've walked away from the black-eyed kids. What's the latest on those little buggers?
Well, I keep getting reports on them. For listeners who aren't really up on the whole black-eyed kids entity, they're generally between 6 and 7 years old, and anywhere from that age to early 20s. Most they're usually, you know, teens. 13, 14, 15, 16, but they can be younger or a little bit older. And they tend to approach people in, you know, some personal space. Either they'll knock on the door of your house, they will, tap on the window of your car as you're sitting there in a parking lot, or they will approach you, you know, on the street and ask you to come someplace. You know, when they, you know, go to a car, they might ask you to, you know, will you drive me to my house? I really need to get some money. Will you drive me here? Will you just let me in? Take me someplace. You know, when there's a house, they'll knock on the window and knock on the door and say, I've got to use your phone. I got to call your mom. Sometimes it gets to the point to where the kids are saying, somebody's chasing me. You've got to help me. You've got to let me in your house.
Oof.
Okay, so they're very demanding. They're very well spoken. Everybody who encounters them say that they speak like an adult. Even the 6 or 7 year old black eyed kids speak like they're an adult. And the people always feel, you know, sort of, you know, in some sort of hypnosis. Like they feel like, yeah, I want to help this kid. But for some other reason, they're scared. And then they, you know, notice some things about the kids. They're usually either, you know, dressed in hoodies if they're in their teens, or they're dressed like 20 years out of date. And they're usually dirty, have bad breath, greasy hair. And all they're taking all that stuff in, then they notice the eyes. And the eyes are completely black. There's no whites, no irises. It's just black. You know, like, you know, looking into voids, looking at a rat. You know, anybody out there who's got kids and you've ever had those little people dolls, those things freak me out because they're all black-eyed kids. Anyway, and that usually, when somebody notices the eyes, I mean, that's it. End of story, boom, slam the door, get the hell off my property, I never want to see you again. But they're all that, you know, similar type of encounter.
Now, I also noticed in the blog there are some tales of black-eyed people. Are these essentially kind of the same thing, or are these more, it seemed like these were kind of weird encounters just with strange people at random in various places, almost like that priest story, but with a black-eyed person.
Well, right, yeah, these are, like I said, most of the stories of black-eyed, you know, the black-eyed entities are kids. I mean, the kids could even, I even talked with a guy who had a nephew that he was sure was, you know, it was some demonic little entity because, you know, it would, you know, even as, you know, really smart as a toddler would try and, like, turn bookshelves over on babies.
Oh, God.
And, you know, trip people downstairs and you know, crap like that. And he said that one time the baby's mom picked him up after, you know, it tried to do something like this. And the baby was looking at this man over his mom's shoulder, and it grinned, and then the eyes just went from blue to completely black.
Ew.
So, I mean, it's not, I mean, it can go from even that young, but what you're talking about is a little bit older. Yeah, a good example is a case out of Australia. I talked to the nurse from Brisbane, who, a new woman from Sydney, had just moved to town and was working at the hospital where she worked, and something just felt wrong about this woman. And but one day they were on shift together, and she had to find this woman. She couldn't find her. She went to the nurse's station, and they're like, well, I think she's down past the cafeteria. So she kept asking people she saw on the way, you know, where Julia, I don't remember what her name was, I'm just going to call her Julia, where Julia was. And they pointed back finally to a bathroom that's way back in the back of the hospital. And this woman walks back to this bathroom, and she sees this other nurse who creeps her out standing in the middle of the bathroom. And she says, Julia, and the woman turns around and looks at her, and the eyes are just, you know, like ink has poured over the, you know, poured over the banks, you know.
Oh, God.
You know, it's just black, and this woman's staring at her. And the woman starts to smile, and the nurse I was talking to just got the heck out of there and took the next week off.
And weird.
By the time she came back to work, the Julia, the new creepy nurse had left. But that black-eyed people, they're not, you know, these encounters aren't just for kids.
It could be
about anybody.
Makes you almost wonder, like, this Julia character, maybe she's like, we've talked about how, you know, you have no stories where someone actually lets the black-eyed kids in. Maybe that's kind of like the end result. You end up, you know, they end up becoming a part of you somehow or something like that.
Right, or I've had people speculate to me that maybe all of these cases where, you know, people who are normally healthy and die of, in quotes, natural causes in their house, you know, maybe they let a black-eyed person in.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was so into black-eyed kids a couple of years ago. I was planning on writing a book about it. I remember when Mac Tonies died, because I'd known Mac for a couple of years. I'd interviewed him a number of times, had coffee with him, and that's the first thing that crossed my head. Maybe you let a black-eyed kid in.
Weird, yeah.
And at that point, I was like, you know, yeah, I need to back off.
Yeah, because they could be coming to your door next.
Yeah, that's one of the things my wife said. She goes, yeah, you can write about any of this stuff, but if one of those comes to my door, it's your ass.
Well, it's have there been, I think we might have talked about this, but I'm not sure. Has anyone ever gotten a picture of one of these things, or are they, you can't really tell nowadays anyway with the internet and Photoshop and...
People ask, you know, a lot of things that I write about. I have people that will post comments on my blog, they'll email me, you know, ask about, I'm not going to believe this unless I can see a picture, and I always respond with, I'm not going to believe it if I see a picture.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I teach photojournalism at my university. I know what you can do with Photoshop. Some of our film students, what they can do with computer programs nowadays is just amazing. So I don't trust any still or video photography. I mean, it's kind of sad, but I can't.
No, it's weird. I was talking about this with somebody in a previous interview here for season 7. It's like this weird sort of modern paradoxical problem of the paranormal, where it's like what once was such a great piece of evidence for us being the photograph now has been rendered impotent, essentially.
Exactly. I think just recently Nick Pope said that he saw some photograph that was, you know, it was proof. He knew that was an extraterrestrial craft, and then you know, the British Ministry of Defense destroyed it. Well, and this was, you know, a couple of decades ago. Well, yeah, sure, at that point, you know, that's believable, but yeah, today, I mean, any credibility whatsoever is destroyed.
Yeah.
Just like any Bigfoot picture you see, just discount it.
Exactly, yeah. Somehow even the Bigfoot pictures still remain terrible. It's like, no one can come up with a
good one. The thing is, even the ones that are really great, you can't, I mean, they're like the one recently that there was a hunter's camera, it took a picture, a trail cam took a picture of the back of a Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah, I saw that, yeah.
That looked freaking amazing.
There's
no way in
cool.
hell that's true.
Exactly, yeah. It was both awesome and highly, highly suspect.
Highly.
I've heard so much about the black-eyed kids since the last time we talked. It seems like it really is... It really resonates with a lot of people. Like even after our last interview, I got a lot of feedback and continuously mentioning the black-eyed kids. Freaks people out.
Well, and there's a great reason that it freaks people out. I mean, as an adult, don't you feel, I think every adult probably feels this way. I mean, if they see a kid that's in some kind of trouble, they need some kind of help, I mean, you feel immediate empathy. You want to help that kid. And then all of a sudden, you know, You look and you find out that this kid that you were just about ready to help, just about ready to let into your house, give it a cookie and a glass of milk, while you called the police to come, you know, and rescue it, you just realized it's an effed up little monster.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, instead of this, you know, sweet little street urchin who was in trouble. I mean, because it's little kids take people's guards down, and then, you know, when they realize that, you know, this is unknown. This is dangerous. That's very, very appealing to people. I mean, it's like, you know, watching The Exorcist live in your own house.
If we could only sell tickets.
I wonder if there's been a Exorcist musical done. That would be nice.
That would be nice, yeah.
With a you know, pea soup splatter zone. I gotta start this. I'm gonna bring this up.
Yeah.
If this comes up, any listeners, that's my idea.
Yeah, we don't want. Yeah. Maybe, yeah, we're gonna end up hearing like in a couple months, like some off-Broadway production of The Exorcist. We're like, what the fuck? Let's find that guy. He heard it from our show. All right. Now, speaking of sort of like evil, diminutive beings, another story that you mentioned when we were setting up the interview that you thought was particularly chilling, and I read it and was tremendously tweaked out, and that's the evil little man saga, which you detailed at the blog, over the course of several blog posts. So, talk about this sort of like gnome-like creature that was terrorizing this farm.
Yeah, this this story goes to a story that I don't ever tell people because I was massively sleep deprived when this happened. When I was 17 years old, I actually worked at Royal Stadium as a food vendor, and I was driving home one night. It was really late, and I was staying at my grandma's that night for some reason. And when I parked my truck, and I got out, I looked across the street. And the neighbor across the street had garden gnomes sitting underneath a bush. And they kind of caught my eye because they were moving. The arms and legs were moving. And I'm like, yeah, I need to go to bed. But and I know that's sleep deprivation, but those type of garden gnomes with the little pointed hats, little red pointed hats, and a little, you know, a little green or gold jacket, are, you know, based on things from Europe. The Tom Tar, I think is their name, is a gnome entity from Sweden. I interviewed a guy whose grandma was from Sweden and would regale him with stories about the bad things these little Tom Tars did around the house, you know, if you didn't lay out, you know, food for them. But anyway... The story is based in California, by the Toole River. It's T-U-L-E, I believe. This woman and her kids moved into this farmhouse, and there were a number of houses on the property and a shed that was really close to the house, and a river went through the property. And they, you know, would like to go down to the river, and the dogs would splash around, and the kids would throw sticks in, and whenever they walked back to the house, walking by this shed really creeped them out, and the dogs would always bark at the shed. Well, they would notice later that things that they had brought, animals they brought, some ducks, chickens, and cats, would, you know, they all disappeared. Had no idea what happened to them. And then one night, it was an early evening, the mom came home, her and her son, who was about 7 at the time, got out of the car, and the mom was about ready to grab her bag of groceries, and she heard a cackle. And she looks over, and by this shed is one of these garden gnome looking guys, between 2 and 3 feet tall, pointed red hat, gold shirt, brown pants, pointed needle-like teeth, in a mouth that she said covered the entire, you know, across the entire face, and it was staring at her laughing. And she just, screw the grocery, she grabbed her kid, ran in the house.
Yeah.
And this thing, you know, let out a bellow, and she knew it was following her, but she didn't turn around to look. But she got into the house, slammed the door, her daughters were in there, you know, like, what's going on? And she said, just get down! Well, the first story of the house was, you know, up a porch. So it was, I mean, the windows in the kitchen were like 10 feet off the ground. And she said she could see this red pointed hat sticking up in the window, which absolutely terrified her. And she'd, I mean, hear it just chattering outside. She had no idea what it was saying. Eventually it went away. She went outside, got the groceries in, and they moved out of the house very, very soon afterward. Which, I mean, this story is scary enough. But I got a story a couple of years later from a woman who described a similar house right outside the same town, right beside the same river. There was a shed next to the house that really creeped her and her husband out. Her and her husband had 2-year-old twins and a golden retriever. They dug a pond, and they dug a koi pond. And they put little garden gnomes, little concrete garden gnomes around it, and little toadstools, and they hated walking by that shed, and the dog barked like the other one did, and they started noticing that their koi, the fish, were disappearing. You know, they figured that, you know, raccoons or things were eating it, and they noticed that the garden gnomes and toadstools would, you know, be moved around. And one night, when they put the kids to bed, and they were in the living room, the dog was sleeping on the floor, and they heard a cackle from outside. They looked out, and they had they'd installed a light, an outside light, over the koi pond, and they looked, and there was this exact gnome creature standing by the pond. And when it saw them looking at them, it reached in the pond, grabbed a fish, and bit its head off.
Ew. Like as a message?
I think it was a message. They called the sheriff's department, and all they said was, you know, we have an intruder. And the sheriff came out and looked around, and they're like, no, there's nothing here. I mean, there's some kids' footprints around the pond, but that's it. And they knew that was, you know, from the gnome, that gnome creature, that was its footprints. Well, later, and this was probably one of the creepier parts of the encounters that they had with it, was that one day they heard a cat screaming from inside the shed, and they'd never gone in the shed because it creeped them out so much. Well, they were both Iraq War veterans. They were both in the military, and the husband's like, you know, screw this. If there's a cat being hurt, I've got to get it. So he opened up the door and with a flashlight looked in the shed. And there was a cat that had been half-skinned.
Ew.
Laying in the shed, and it was still alive. And the guy was just all freaked out, and he went to get something to put the cat in. He was gone, he said, for maybe a minute and a half. And when he looked back in the shed, the whole thing was gone.
Ew,
and it couldn't have gone anywhere by itself.
Jesus. See, these stories that make me think that there are these sort of creatures, you know, living amongst us, in a way.
Well, I mean, I've gotten similar stories, not just from that place. I mean, I got the two families hooked up, and they went because they weren't sure that they lived in the same house. I got the two wives hooked up, and they went out there and looked, and sure as hell they lived in the same house, so they were talking about the same creature. But I've gotten similar stories out of Liberty, Missouri, out of Albany, New York. But think about all the, well, and one out of upstate New York, a couple of years ago, I talked with a guy who, when he was a kid, he was staying with his grandma, and during a storm one night, he heard a scream outside the window, and he was sleeping with his grandma because he was afraid of the lightning, and he's like, Grandma, what's that? And she's like, don't worry about it. Just forget you heard it. And he went to sleep, and he got up the next morning, couldn't find grandma, went out, and she was on the front porch. And with a mop, and she was cleaning up, and he remembers seeing these tiny human footprints on the porch that she was mopping up. And, you know, I looked into this, and there are Native American, you know, legends from that area of tiny people who you know, cause storms and scream during you know, storms of that nature. You know, and there are stories, I mean, stories of trolls, gnomes, goblins, elves, all over Europe, things in Russia, things in Africa. I mean, these stories of diminutive entities are everywhere.
I like how they haven't really changed, you know, with how they're still sort of wearing the outfits that were...
pointed hat, really? Red pointed hat, seriously?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, don't you like have a Yankees cap you can wear backwards?
It's like, dude, go down the Baby Gap. Just come on. We want to accept you into our society, but you need to stop dressing that way.
Right, and get a Social Security number. Start paying your damn taxes.
But yeah, it does. It's interesting too, because like, well, you know, it's funny because what we do, we're in this sort of weird field and stuff, and I'm sure if I told somebody like where I work. That, you know, well, last night I was doing an interview for my show, and we were talking about, you know, real-life dwarves and gnomes and stuff. And, you know, they would never believe you that these things, you know, that these stories are out there. But they are. It's the amazing part.
Well, and it's, yeah, the more I talk to people, the more research that I've done on different paranormal things, you know, I felt the same way. I mean, it's like thinking back... when I first started this, you know, gnomes, really? Are you freaking kidding me? Gnomes.
Yeah.
I can kind of picture Bigfoot, you know, I can see that as an unclassified, you know, North American ape, maybe so, but a gnome? And, you know, after talking to people and getting these stories, you know, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Gnome.
It's It's like, yeah, dude, they're out there. And they're not just like from the 1700s in Ireland or whatever. These aren't just like European stories, you know.
Nope. They're out there, they're in your neighborhood, and they're pissed.
That would be, see, that maybe we need to make that into the musical, because that's a great tagline.
Yeah, yeah.
That would really freak people out. This next story really intrigued me, I guess is the best way to put it, is the tale of the Fae Girl, which I thought was just so bizarre. Like, again, it's like it goes back to this thing about the gnomes. It's like if you had told me that there was somebody out there who claims that he was involved with you know, a descendant of the fairy folk, I'd be like, get the hell out of here. But then you read the story, and it's like, I want to know more about this. So tell me more about the tale of the Fae Girl.
Right, yes. Getting into this, I'm like, I want to know more, but then again, I want to know less. this man was chatting with a woman on a dating site, and they hooked up. I mean, they chatted, and she started to tell him that, you know, these stories about that she was like one quarter fairy. It's like, okay, that's cool. You're still hot. So they decided to meet, and it was like the round trip from where he was. I mean, it was like 1,800 miles, something like that. It was like 900 miles one way. And he drove to southern Missouri, where this woman is. He said there's like a fae community down there. And he went down to meet her, she claimed to be descended from fairy folk, from elves, or whatnot. Anyway, he meets her for the very first time, and he's just struck by her just unnatural beauty, and they spend the next, you know, 2 days in a motel room just doing it. And he just said it was extremely bizarre because he never felt tired. And he said that's all they did, and after they were over, it was like, okay, we'll see you later. And they still continued to chat, and while he was back home, chatting with her, she seemed to know things that she shouldn't know, like where he'd left something in his house. He had a friend who, had cancer, and I guess he'd mentioned it to her, and, not a week later, he was talking with her, and he's like, hey, yeah, she's gone into remission, and she's like, okay, yeah, you're welcome. Yeah. Other weird things that happened to him that she acted like she was in control of, and he was pretty sure she was because she couldn't have really known about it.
Yeah.
And he said that these fae tend to, live around each other, and they take jobs at odd times of night. This girl, delivered newspapers, which you do that at 3-4 o'clock in the morning.
Why is that?
Not dealing with regular humans.
Okay. Interesting. Now, what about this fae community? Have you been down there to check it out? Do you know anything about that at all?
Oh, I want nothing to do with that. Nothing.
Why are you frightened of the fae? They sound adorable.
Nice. Because you were mentioning elementals,
right.
and the fae have, you know, things in common with the elementals is that they don't really, according to people who claim to be in air quotes here in the know, God, I hate giving air quotes on an interview. they don't feel, you know, human emotion like we do.
Yeah.
They're intrigued by it. They're curious about it. They want to experience it, but they just don't. And that's what this guy encountered. He drove, the 900 miles one way, like 4 times in 4 months, just to hang out with this girl and, you know, spend 2 entire days having sex. They said the last time he went down there, it was just all of a sudden, there's just a switch that flipped. She wanted nothing to do with him. Nothing at all. They went out on her paper route. She wouldn't let him touch her. They ran out of gas when they were on the route, and the car died. And he's like, "Well, do you want me to watch for gas?" She goes, "Or to walk for gas?" you know, I'll just grab a gas can and go. And she's like, you know, it's not necessary. She started the car and they drove like 5 miles to the next gas station. And he said that, you know, good things happened when he was with her, but she told him that bad things would happen without her protection. So, yeah, I don't want any of that stuff.
Weird. Very strange. I'd like to contact this girl for some of this weekend-long sex.
Well, yeah, and she sounds hot, too. So
yeah.
It's a double bonus.
Yeah. It's one of those rare, like, love on the internet stories that, well, I guess, you know, it didn't turn out totally well. You know, they kind of break up, I guess, but, you know, still. She didn't turn out to be a man.
Not a bad thing.
So it's always, yeah, exactly. Very weird. And I remember the story from the blog said that she said that, like, her grandfather had sex with a fairy or something like that, and that's how she had the fey blood, if you will, or something along those lines, right?
Yeah, it's like my grandfather was Gandalf or some shit. Yeah, something like that.
So weird.
I don't mean to make light of that.
No, I mean, I'm still all about the fey, so.
No, I just didn't want to piss any fey off.
That's what I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
I endorse the fae. I'd like to meet one. So if there's any fae out there, contact me. So she just kind of just ended it with this guy. Was he okay afterwards, or did bad things happen to him?
Well, and he and I didn't write about this. I don't think I did. Just because of the nature of it, he had on the way home from this last encounter that she had, you know, where she had basically broken things off. He was driving home and all of a sudden bad stuff kind of started happening to him. You know, bad stuff at work, you know, he didn't feel well. He came down with this horrible, you know, he came down with a sickness. And he kept trying to talk to this fae girl online, and eventually, she responded back to him and she's like, something, you were vulnerable. I had let you go. Something dark saw you on the road and hitched a ride with you, and now it's messing with you. I will, you know, I'll get rid of this for you. But after this, don't contact me again.
Jesus.
And he was okay after that.
Weird. How long ago was all this? Well, they met online, so it couldn't have been that long ago.
Oh, it was like 5 years, maybe. I'm estimating here, but I don't think it was any farther than that.
Jesus. So weird. So weird.
So weird or normal. I mean, go back 400 years or go to today's Iceland where they, you know, plan construction over, you know, around ferry sites.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's not so weird there.
I know, wow. Hadn't thought about that, but yeah. Yeah.
And I grew up thinking they just fix shoes.
So, you know, maybe if you're like out on the, see, all the people I encounter on the graveyard shift, they're people that, you know, they seem like they belong on the graveyard shift. So.
They're people with something called a record.
I used to be a graveyard shift janitor, and they used to call the shift Siberia. That's what they'd send all the, that's what they'd send all the janitors that couldn't, for a variety of sordid reasons, could not work in the daytime. So, it was like they would ship you, because like, you can't fuck with the union, of course, so they would ship you off to Siberia, which is the overnight shift. So.
Right, can you work in the day? No, wait a second, your skin burst into flames, so, yeah.
Yeah, like one guy had like a tattoo of like a naked woman on his forearm, and they're like, you know, around the children, that's not, that doesn't work.
You know, at Pierce Elementary School, I think maybe we should keep the naked woman covered up.
Yeah. Put him on the Siberia shift. All right, so that's the tale of the fey girl. Now, this next story actually has a banal connection. I don't know if you know this or not, but it's the time traveling tourist story.
I did not know this had a banal connection.
At the end, in the update part, you say that, I'll just tell the banal connection part, and then you can, I'm the one that posted it on the Coast to Coast website.
Oh, okay, absolutely, yeah.
I couldn't believe it, because I was reading the article, and I was like, I actually went back to check, and I was like, yeah, I did. I'm the one that put that up there. That's so weird. And then that turns into a whole other twist to the story. But I guess tell this, I'm fascinated. I know you are, too. I'm fascinated by time travel and time travelers and the potential behind all that.
Oh, I always have been. But tell me the truth first. You were reading the post, and you're like, fucking off, it didn't mention me.
No. No, because I wasn't even sure if I did that or not. I had to go back and check because I didn't want to take credit for something I didn't do. So, but no, I mean it's fascinating and first of all, before we get into the time travel story, did this come from the Time Traveler Reporting Center?
No, and you know this maybe I haven't advertised it as much as I should have because I've been fascinated since I was a little kid. I think everything goes back to Star Trek, but that's irrelevant right now. Even though it is William Shatner's birthday today, so it's not irrelevant.
Nice.
Yeah. I've been fascinated by this, by this topic forever. Time Travel Reporting Center, it's because I've gotten a lot of, really great time travel stories over the years. I've got a couple from people who, basically the same story, but they're still really cool. Of guys, they stop someplace. One guy was in Texas, I remember. He was getting gas, and a man in a suit that looked like a pretty normal business suit, but it was a little bit off. There's something different about it. Just walked out of the bathroom and started screaming, "What year is it?"
Oh, Jesus! He went in and came out at the wrong time.
Yeah, something like that. And when the guy was like, "Okay, it's 2007." He's like, what? It's 2007. He's, no. So, I mean, that makes pay at the pump really freaking cool when you can get away with somebody screaming no at you who's pissed off that they're in the wrong year. But I got stuff like this. I also talked with a guy who was working at a really old winery in Oregon, and he had to go in the basement to get something. And he went in the basement, it's been redone. The building's really old, but it was redone, and it's a hotel and a winery, and all sorts of fancy events are there, weddings and whatnot. And he went in the basement to get some wine, and the basement was empty. And there was water dripping from the ceiling, and there was wood rot everywhere, he was freaking out because he went from room to room that he'd already been in before, where the wine was. He knew there was wine, and he knew there wasn't water dripping from places, and he knew the wood was fresh. And it was just, he was freaking out, and he walked back up the stairs that were, creaky stairs. And walked back into the hotel and he was fine and he grabbed somebody and he went back downstairs downstairs as he had remembered it before. The stairs were fairly new and there was no water and the wine was where it was supposed to be and everything. But, he's sure that he stepped backward into time when this building had been abandoned for decades. But, I mean, I'm fascinated by those stories. I keep getting them, and I'm like, I want to have a place where people who have encountered their own personal time slip or have encountered somebody like the big man in the weird suit screaming, "What year is it?" You know, I want a place for them to, tell their experiences to the world. And, nobody's done it.
People, you gotta send these in. I love time travel stories. I find them so bizarre. Although now I'm tempted to go to like a consignment shop and get like an old timey sort of like 70s outfit and just be that guy for a while.
Just go stew.
Yeah, and just go into bathrooms and come out and be like, "What year is it?"
Or the BG still relevant?
That could be, that might help meeting women too. You could be like, "I'm from the past." Technically, you're not lying, though. I mean, we're all really from the past, in a sense. So.
We're all technically time travelers.
Yeah, just very slowly.
Yeah.
So what's the story of the time traveling tourists?
Well, back in 2006, a man named Ken Helbling walked into Barnes & Noble. It was raining. He went in. He's like, "I got nothing else better to do. Sunday morning, I'm not going to church. So I'm going to go and get some coffee and look for a book." And he went in and he was waiting in line to get coffee, and there was a man in front of him. He said he was older, about 65 years old, wearing a red flannel shirt and blue jeans. And when it was his turn for coffee, the guy said, well, I don't have a discount card, but can I use my sister's? And the barista said, yeah, sure, why not? And this guy didn't have the card. He just rattled off like 17 numbers in a row without reading it off anything.
Oh, God.
And that was, you know, the barista was feeding him into the computer, and, yeah, that was number was okay, and he got his discount. But as he was waiting behind this dude, he noticed that there was two high school girls, a blonde and a brunette, that were standing close to him and staring at him. And he said they were wearing like Jordache jeans, and they had the big 80s hair.
So now, did it seem like they were with him, or were they just sort of intrigued by him?
Well, he thought that he just had the feeling that these two girls and the older guy in the red flannel shirt were together.
Okay.
Well, I think they eventually walked off together, so that kind of just solidified that. But and it said it was really weird because they looked familiar to him. He said they looked about 17, but they looked like a couple girls that he knew in high school, and he didn't want to stare at them because he didn't want to be a creeper. He also, he thought about saying, hey, where did you get those retro clothes? Because, the jeans, he said, they look brand new, or their clothes look brand new, but they were from like the 1980s. And he kind of just dismissed it. He went and got his coffee and went to browse books. And then he picked up a book and he started to look at it, and, he looked over and the girls were still there, had followed him, and they were staring at him. So he put the book up and left because he was kind of creeped out at this point. And so the next week he went and did the same thing. And the next Sunday, same time of day, he, went back to Barnes & Noble. And when he walked into the coffee area, the same guy, dressed in the same red flannel shirt and blue jeans, was standing there ordering a coffee, spouting the same, insanely long number off the top of his head to get a discount on the coffee. And the two girls were there too, but they were, they were wearing the same clothes and they had the same big hair, and they were standing there, drinking coffee, staring at him. And when he walked, went back to find the book he'd looked at the week before, he wandered around, didn't see them, and he stood there looking at the book. And when he turned around, the two girls were sitting on the floor looking at him, and when they saw him looking at them, they put their books over their face and like, oh crap, he's seen us, let's hide our eyes. And he's like, wow, screw this, I'm gonna buy my book and just go home. And when he got home, he started reading the book, and at some point in the book, some of the people in the book became tourists who were traveling in time to tour different eras, and he was like, damn.
Yeah.
I think this just happened to me.
That's so weird, because it's like, you wonder, they weren't like, well, they couldn't have been people he knew in high school, because they would have to have time traveled from when he was in high school, and that seems unlikely. So,
right, he said, he said the one was blonde, one was brunette. He said the blonde one looked exactly like the girl that he knew in high school.
Weird.
The brunette looked nearly the same, but she was a lot taller. And he thought maybe initially when he first saw them that, hey, maybe this is Alicia and Amy's daughters. And now he's like, maybe it's their granddaughters or their great-granddaughters or something.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I didn't think of that. Yeah.
Yeah, now let's get to the banal part of the story.
I play such a minimal role in that. I never should have mentioned that.
Well, no, because it's pretty cool. He had Helbing got a hold of me later. Much later. The story was on the Coast to Coast website. A link was, and he called his brother who lives in Connecticut to say, hey, I just had a story about me has been on the Coast to Coast website. And the guy's like, his brother's like, yeah, I know. You contacted me, like a month ago telling me about it. And he said, how did I contact you? His brother said, well, you sent me an email. And this guy knows that he hadn't sent his brother an email in like a year. And he hadn't called him for about a month. But his brother told him everything that was in the story. And he's kind of freaking out, and his brother is, you know, works in the computer industry and, went back and looked at everything he could, and he's like, yeah, you know, I didn't get an email from you. I have a link to the story before it was published in my, you know, browser history, but yeah, there's nothing that tells me that you sent it to me. So if you hadn't done that, Tim, I wouldn't have had that.
I added another element to the story.
Yeah, so you posted the story like, you know, 2 weeks before it actually was on my blog.
Maybe I have some kind of time connection. It sounds more like this guy has some kind of weird time, like he gets on stuck in time somehow. But who knows?
I don't know. If I'm getting stuck in time, it's not going to be the 80s.
Only if you can, like, gamble like Biff Tannen or whatever his name is from the Back to the Future movies.
Yeah, Biff Tannen. Nice pulling that out.
Yeah.
Pulling out the Back to the Future 2 reference. That never gets referenced.
You know, if I just one day wake up and there's like a giant Offutt, you know, sports complex that you've, you know, restaurant, casino that you've designed over there, although you become unstuck in time.
Yeah, and, you know, you can come have free beer.
Awesome. So,
yeah, it's all good.
Nice. Yeah. So what do you, what do you make of these time travel stories? Makes you wonder, like, that there are these time travelers running around sometimes.
I don't know. I mean, because one of the benefits of teaching at a university is that I get to hang out with physicists. I get to go, we have dinner, sit at a bar, have a beer, next to physicists and farmers at the next table. So I mean, we talk about time travel and physicists. One of the reasons they become physicists is because, hey, time travel's awesome. And, I've talked about, the reality of time travel and the fact that, yeah, theories are out there that it can actually happen. Supposedly we can't do it yet, but, I mean, there's so many stories that I've encountered about, things that are time travel related that, I mean, I think there's gotta be something, Tim.
Yeah. It's weird. I've heard quite a few stories. You remember the one about the stockbroker that was like, I think they arrested him and he said he was a time traveler or something like that. That happened.
Is this the guy who had a passport from a country that didn't exist?
No, I've never heard that one before. Weird.
Oh yeah, this is a guy who, God, when was he like flown into Japan and. He was like, really freaked out because he gave his passport that was, everything was in order and he'd been to Japan before because it was stamped in, but he was from a country that nobody ever heard of. And, he was, questioned and detained for a while and, they eventually, let him go under surveillance and he, disappeared from his hotel room.
Weird.
Yeah, this is something I read within the last year.
So strange. Well, there's like two different types of time stories. It's like the time slip story and then the time, time travelers. It's like, I don't know if I'd... time travel fascinates me and frightens me in the sense of the fear of, like, getting stuck somehow. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I don't know, like getting stuck somewhere.
Like stuck some time.
It's like, yeah, I have no idea. Because people, when they think of time travel, about how cool it would be, have absolutely no idea the reality of what it would be like to be in a different time.
Right.
If you go back in time past the 1904 Pure Food and Drug Act, might have been 1906, yeah, you wouldn't be able to eat. Because you'd be throwing up the whole time. I mean, you're going to be going back into times when their food was, I mean, your system is not designed anymore. We've been, we're not tough. We're not tough individuals. We can't eat, spoiled meat and still survive. I mean,
right,
without vomiting our guts up.
Right. And it's like, even now you look at how technologically pampered we are. Can you imagine, like, even just time traveling back to like the 70s or something,
Well, I could because I live there. Farrah Fawcett was awesome.
So you actually long to travel back to the 70s?
Oh, no, I'd rather go to the future.
That would be good. That would be interesting to see. Like I said, though, I mean, like the story about the guy coming out of the bathroom, it's like, did he ever get back to where he came from? Or is he the guy that's always hanging around in the gas station bathrooms?
Yeah, there's always one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like I'm trying to get back to 1950.
You can tell, sure. You can tell the time travelers in gas station bathrooms, they're the ones who are not dragging a key connected to a muffler or a big block of wood. Yeah.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.